As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. It is Tuesday, September 7th. NFL season is here. Week one has arrived. 48 hours from now, we will be getting ready for Cowboys and Buccaneers to kick off the 2021 season. Week one Sunday, not too far after that. We are all very, very excited for the start of the season and the end of all draft season stuff, everything. Although, guys, I actually have two more drafts. I've got an auction tonight and a draft tomorrow, so I've still got a little bit of work ahead of me before we're able to start the season. Pretty fun stuff. How are you guys doing today?
You guys are crazy to keep drafting.
That is crazy. I actually did both of my – I finished up yesterday, but now I have to go in and manually format all the weekly schedules to fit the, you know, our divisional alignments and all that. So there's still work for me to be done. And, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to go up to the wire like you're doing for sure.
Do you like doing that sort of stuff, Funston? I do that for my like home league, and like where I go in and manually set schedules based on like previous opponents, and we're always rotating it, so like just the regular Yahoo shuffle doesn't get the job done for us. And I don't know, I get a little bit of accomplishment feeling out of it.
Yeah, I like it sort of, but then I'm doing the same thing for two leagues where it's 12 teams with the same exact schedule formatting and all that, so I'm basically doing the redundancy of it. And, you know, the second time through is not as exciting as the first time.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I actually had to input our offline draft results twice because something was set incorrectly the first time I did it. And the first time I was like typing them in, just having a great time. It was right after our draft. I'm still like making jokes and stuff. And then I realized after I had input everything that I needed to do it again because something needed to be changed and couldn't be changed once the teams were in. And then that second time through wasn't quite as like bouncy and fun.
Deflating, yeah. I will say, so I'm not sure
when over I'm to not... sleeper. I'm on sleep. The sleeper, like you can change anything, anytime, anywhere.
I like that.
That's pretty.
I will give credit to a lot of the platforms. The ones I was using, as far as their offline draft input thing, just pretty snappy, pretty easy to do it in a quick fashion.
I have never had an easier auction than doing it on the sleeper system because you can just have the entire board there and you just click on their open spot and put the player there. So you don't.
It's too early for our paid reads here, Jake.
No, a lot of people ask every single year, like, what do you play on the most? And I switched over to them for the home league, and it's the best. I will say this, the one downside is there's too many places to chat, sleeper. Like, fix that, because you can chat in the group for the entire league, you can chat in the draft room, and then you can send people direct messages. So it's like, where's my notification coming from?
Too many places to chat, too many things to do, too many ways to have fun with this football season here right around the corner. We're in this weird position here on this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, guys, right, where we're, you know, we don't really have stuff to talk about yet for week one. We've got Jake's got a big waiver column up on the site, and you can check that out right now if you're a subscriber. theathletic.com/fantasyfootballpod will get you 50% off. Can do that. We're going to do week one rankings on Thursday's episode. So we're in this in-between period where draft season's over. The season, as we talk about it on a podcast, isn't quite here. So what's better to do than talk about our guys? We're going to run through some of our favorite guys, the guys who ended up on our teams this season. One last show with a preseason feel to it before we really flip the switch later this week. It is the My Guys show here on the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, and we'll just talk about these guys. I'll throw them out. I'll steer the conversation. We'll go, you know, switch off one of Jake's guys, one of Brandon's, one of mine, and we can just talk about these guys and have some fun before we really get ready for the start of the season later this week. Let's start with a guy who I actually did draft over the weekend in my home league, but it's one of Jake's guys, Kyle Pitts. I guess the one thing to clarify before we get going here is, like, these are guys that we're getting a lot, guys that we're comfortable reaching for, right? Guys that we obviously are comfortable with, more than comfortable with, at what their ADP was all summer long. So Jake, Kyle Pitts, I mean, I think this dude is basically a wide receiver in a tight end's body and with a tight end's designation. What do you got here?
Yeah, so I did bowl calls with Chris Meany on All in Football, and one was that Kyle Pitts outperforms George Kittle. And if you look at how that happens, is basically kind of what you said. You said it, wide receiver in a tight end body. I always kept saying during the draft process, a wide receiver masquerading as a tight end. But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. What's the thing you said about wide receiver? He's not essentially masquerading, because where did the Falcons line him up? At wideout. Yep. So I go back to what I said with the Justin Jefferson comparison. I'm not expecting a Justin Jefferson rookie season. That being said, it's the same situation he's stepping into. There is a void for the number two receiver. Russell Gage is fine as a three, but Russell Gage is Russell Gage. There is a void here for Kyle Pitts to step into with a higher passing offense than what Justin Jefferson just stepped into, and alongside Calvin Ridley to line up out wide and at tight end. And, you know, if somebody's blocking, it's going to be Hurst. So to say that he gets 1,000 yards and 6-7 touchdowns, I think, is more than doable given his skill set. And that would be record-breaking. It wouldn't be Ditka's season, obviously. But you give him 120, I'm not saying 140, 150 like Waller, because that's why I said he's not getting past Waller. But you give him 120 targets, he's going to finish as tight end 3-4 at worst. And he's going to be pushing the top 20 of wide receivers if ranked there.
Yeah, I think the issue, and people want to throw out, I know Pitts is this, you know, generational talent, but, you know, he is a tight end, and tight ends never hit the ground running. And the whole point of that is you can't think of him that way. They have their traditional tight end in Hayden Hurst. And if you just think of him as a wide receiver and then think about how many wide receivers have been able to hit the ground running in the last handful of years, it makes it a lot easier to understand that, you know, he's not going to put up these lowly first year kind of tight end numbers, you know, and that there's a bigger ceiling there for him.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the way that you got to be thinking about Kyle Pitts. This is really a wide receiver, and so it makes that draft day cost that we were looking at all the more palatable, and something that we can all get on board with. Jake getting in on Kyle Pitts to start off our My Guys show. You know, you could come up with some sort of punny team name if you want to. I'll workshop it as we're going through this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast. Let's go to Brandon here. Brandon, I love Aaron Jones. You love Aaron Jones. We've talked about him a ton. Really played his way up into like the first half of a lot of drafts that I was in, and I think that's totally rightful after what we've seen from him the last 2 years. AJ Dillon be damned.
Yeah, top five fantasy running back each of the last 2 years. Keep pointing to that, and I think he's in a better situation than he was in the last 2 years with Jamal Williams out of the way. Just talked about him absorbing a lot of Jamal Williams's targets, and even if he has the same rushing number, but if he gets half of Jamal Williams' targets, he's looking at, you know, 60 catches plus. I think he'll get there. So yeah, I would not be surprised. He's one guy that I'm getting outside the top five picks that I think has a real strong possibility of being the number one fantasy running back. Wouldn't completely shock me. So we've talked about Aaron Jones a decent amount in the past. I won't have to belabor it too much.
Yeah, this turned into the show where I hate Aaron Jones.
Yeah, apparently. Exactly.
Like, I don't disagree with you at all. I think Nick Chubb's in a similar but different situation, not seeing the passing volume, but somebody that you told me, like, Nick Chubb. I said Austin Eckler already. That was one of the bowl calls when we did him on the last show, is that Austin Eckler is going to be top five. But you tell me, like, Austin Eckler, Aaron Jones, Nick Chubb, some of those running backs at the back RB1s that could finish his top five, I would put him in the mix.
Yeah, I was.
But were you stunned, Beller? You stunned like I'm praising Aaron Jones? Is that what that was?
I open, Jake follow, then it's your turn to step in, Beller.
I don't know what to do with this. Right, I was in a 10-team superflex over the weekend, and really thought I was gonna get Aaron Jones. I had the 10th pick, I should say that, and I pretty much had it in my mind ever since that pick was set. Like, all right, Aaron Jones and a quarterback, something like that. But Aaron Jones came off the board before my pick, so it didn't end up falling that way. We can heap all the love on Aaron Jones that we want. I think he's pretty much all of our guy, and we do have one guy that we can talk about in that way. Also, we all love Aaron Jones, even Jake, who's been dogging him so much, never wanted to take him, never wanted to be on the Aaron Jones side, and now he's come around to Aaron Jones.
It was just Aaron Jones versus Austin Eckler.
Welcome to the team. Welcome to the team here, Jake. I'm going to go with Clyde Edwards-Helaire as my first my guy. Again, another guy that we've talked about a lot, so we don't need to get too deep into this, but everything that he did last season measured against where his skyrocketing ADP went, made him an easy guy to get as the RB 13, 14, 15, 16 off of boards this season, and I think that's just going to ultimately look a little bit foolish because of the offense he plays in and the role he is going to have it in that offense, a guy who I think easily can push up to the 1,500-yard from scrimmage mark. That was one of my bold calls from our show last week, one of my bold predictions. Clyde Edwards-Helaire does indeed get 1,500 yards from scrimmage. I think we see that from him this season, and I think we see him push double-digit touchdowns as well. So I wanted Clyde Edwards-Helaire in every single league I've was in. As I said to you guys, I got two more of these coming up, one today, one tomorrow, and I will be going after CEH in those. I would feel comfortable with him. This wouldn't be my ideal build, but I would feel comfortable with him as my first running back because I do think that he has that sort of ceiling in him this season.
Yeah, I think the excitement is warranted given even what he did disappointingly because people were taking him in the first round wasn't that terrible last year. He was still a mid-level RB2. So with things cleared out, the only thorn in his side is going to be how enamored is the situation with McKinnon being used every single week, because if he loses some of that passing down work to McKinnon, then that's the worst case scenario because Edwards-Helaire is never going to be a 20-touch guy per game. So he needs that passing work.
I have zero shares of Clyde Edwards-Helaire because I feel like, once again, we're coming into year two with the ADP and with the people in the room willing to pay the expectant price, you know, and never is Clyde Edwards-Helaire a value in your draft. People are kind of projecting him to a place that he hasn't been yet. My issue is that, you know, probably not the goal line back. For a guy that looks like he could be great in the passing game, they didn't throw to the running backs in Kansas City that much last year. There is Darrell Williams. There is Jerick McKinnon. I'm not going to push him. I'm not pushing him into the RB1 class. I'm not going to pay close to that. I feel like you have to pay at like an RB12, RB13 price if you want him in a draft. And I'm more like RB15, 16 on him.
Yep, you definitely did have to do that, and it was something that I was comfortable doing, and I hear those concerns for him, but I just think that the talent is ultimately going to be the thing that wins out for him this season, especially in year two. I'm willing to give almost every rookie last year a little bit of the benefit of the doubt for the off seasons, that they didn't have, that they got to have this year. So nice having that season under your belt and then getting your first real off season. I think CEH takes a big step forward in the Chiefs offense this year. I'm actually going to jump to Brandon next because you said you don't want to go with CEH to somewhere where he hasn't been yet, but seems like maybe you want to go to Damian Harris to somewhere he hasn't been yet this season. What gives there?
Well, he's sort of been there. I mean, you watched some Damian Harris last year. There's a lot to like just from the eye test. And what you didn't like was Cam Newton stealing goal line carries. And you didn't like Sony Michel coming in and taking reps and Rex Burkhead splitting some carries and getting pass catches. Now Rex Burkhead's gone. Sony Michel's gone. Cam Newton's gone. Now it's just about, okay, how much of a thorn in the side is Ramondre Stevenson going to be? And, you know, he's a rookie and he was – you know, Damian Harris actually got praise from Bill Belichick this preseason, which, you know, it's a rare thing. So you kind of feel like for the first time in a long time, they have a little bit more of a featured back than they've had in a while. And I just like the guy, and he's still not that expensive. I just had a couple drafts in the last week where I was able to land him as my RB3. I don't have to pay an RB2 price, but I think he is an RB2. So I'm happy to take that.
Yeah, he was part of my guys piece, so
I don't have anything else to add to the fact that I've been on the Damian Harris side of things the entire time as well.
Yeah, we've got some overlapping guys here that are really our guys, or maybe two of our guys, but I want to try to spread things out a little bit as well. I was looking back at some of my earlier drafts over the last couple of days, and got Damian Harris in the Flex League for in like the, I don't know, eighth round or so, something like that. So feeling very good about that. He's my RB3 in that league. So feeling like old Team Beller here is going to be contending for one of those sweet, sweet belts that we get hooked up with for a Flex League championship. Another guy that we've talked about.
Don't discount Funston. Funston got his $30 for J.K. Dobbins. He's excited now.
Oh, yeah. You can go out and spend, some of that on Tyson Williams.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. That wasn't even on my radar, but that's outstanding. I will wield that sword.
30% more than everybody else.
Yeah. All right. I'll take it.
Yeah, except for the Irv Smith people. 28% more
and
than
Travis
that. Or actually
ETN
less
people.
Than that.
ETN yeah. people, too. For anybody that doesn't know what we're talking about, this is the offset. I recommend it for a lot of people. If you draft super early, July, beginning of August, to offset it,
like
if you
it.
Lose anybody, you get the average auction price of said player kicked back to you in FAB. So Funston lost Dobbins. He gets $30 in FAB because that's where Dobbins was going. It was about $30.
It's a genius move, and one that we do in at least the first time I ever saw it was in Top Wars in baseball, and just something that makes sense to offset early drafts and losing guys to injury after that. It's bad enough that you lost the guy. You shouldn't have to, or you should get at least a little bit something back for that. Someone who we haven't lost and hopefully we don't lose is one of Jake's guys, and let's be honest, this has been one of Jake's guys going back to, God, Jake, May? June at the absolute latest, Mike Davis. Mike Davis, one of your guys, right? Pretty much. I mean, you've been beating this drum for a long time, and I'm stunned that Wayne Gallman isn't scaring you away.
I mean, look, it really comes down to, you know, I'll give credit where credit's due to Rudy Gamble actually said that fit wise that Mike Davis makes more sense as well, which is another aspect I wasn't even thinking of, because if you look at the zone blocking scheme that's been brought in, that's Mike Davis, and that's what he's better with. Gallman kind of fits more of the off-tackle type, and what was going wrong with the Giants last year is when the offensive line was breaking down is being able to, you know, get that first step out there. So Davis actually a better fit for the system too. Of course, there's a non-zero chance that, you know, Gallman pushes him or at some point looks better. You know, Davis is a volume situation, but the reason I love that from day one is because of volume, volume, volume. And I keep referencing it. It's like, forget – just throw out James Robinson and David Montgomery from last year, because they actually did pretty well on their volume. James Robinson less than David Montgomery, but I just go back to 2017, and the reason I keep using that is because Leonard Fournette and Melvin Gordon were both top 10 running backs, averaging a robust 3.9 yards per carry, which is what Mike Davis averaged. So again, it's more of the situation. It's the fit. Mm-hmm. It's the volume. You know, is he a guarantee? No. I mean, how many running backs aren't guaranteed to have the job from the person that's right behind him? I mean, we're talking about DeAndre Swift, and we're still speculating that he's been announced as healthy. How many touches Anthony Lynn's going to pull away from him in the first week? So nobody is safe outside of a handful of running backs.
Like 7-8 guys, right?
Yeah. You know, Mike Davis is a my guy as well. I have him everywhere. And like in the last week or so, I've heard there was two outside reporters outside The Athletic that came out, and one of them had said Mike Davis probably wasn't going to get more than 10 or 12 carries. And so I actually shot a note to Jeff Schultz, who covers the Atlanta Falcons for The Athletic. And he kind of confirmed that he felt the same way. And I just got to be honest with you. It's three different reporters that cover Atlanta that say that Mike Davis, they don't see as more than a 10 or 12 carry per game guy. And I 100% disagree with them. And here's the thing. I can go back and look at many times where beat reporters do a good job of covering the news there, but when it comes to projections, they can sometimes just be off. I mean, just, and sometimes straight off. I think that's crazy that they would think that it's only going to be that much. I think he's probably a guarantee for 15 plus carries a game. So I didn't mess with my rankings a whole lot. I'm just going to take it for what it is, somebody's opinion. And I think my opinion differs with them.
Let me even, you know what, let's say they're right. Here's my pushback to that. Let's say they're right. Let's say it's 12 carries a game. He averages over 5 receptions per game last year with Carolina. Yeah. And that was in replacement duty. And that, you know, it's, I'd still think that even if so, you're still talking 16 to 18 touches combined, touches, not carries.
Yeah. And I remember like the running back coach talking up his receiving skills earlier in camp as well. So, you know,
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not a one-for-one offense. It's not like he's stepping into an offense that built itself around Christian McCaffrey, and so that running back role has to exist in that same way. But if you saw what Mike Davis did as a receiver last year, why would you take that away from him? Because he was very good in that role. He was a dangerous pass catcher. He was an adept pass catcher. Obviously not the explosiveness of Christian McCaffrey, but filled that role pretty darn well. And I don't understand why you would suddenly take that away from him when he has shown you it's a skill he has and it's something he can bring to bear in your offense. So again, another one, we're going to have to find some more areas for disagreement. Although I guess that's part of what doing a show twice a week with each other for like a combined hour and 45 minutes per week is going to do. You're going to start to like some of the same guys.
You're
going
to have
some of that overlap.
There we go.
That's exactly what we're looking for. What about Tua Tagovailoa's face? Because I think it's one we're going to see smiling whole lot this season on the field. I've done this a billion times, so I'm not going to do the whole thing again. But if the circumstances of being a rookie in 2020 worked against one person the most, I would argue that it worked against Tua the most, more than any other rookie last season. And then you factor in the hip injury, and then you factor in Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you factor in that suddenly Miami's competing, and they need to have their best quarterback in that very moment, who frankly was Ryan Fitzpatrick for a big chunk of the season. And so just all of that worked against Tua, and all of that is gone. Not most of it, all of that is gone this season. Plus Will Fuller's here eventually, plus Jalen Waddle's here, like, I don't know if any quarterback got a better environmental upgrade this season, maybe save Matthew Stafford, than Tua Tagovailoa and everything that was taken away from him in Miami and then added. Yeah, maybe Sam Darnold as well, right? But he's in that little picture. Like, him and Stafford and Darnold are all like calling each other, like, man, can you believe how much better this year is than last year? And so I want Tua. I think he can be a consistent starter in one quarterback leagues, and in super flex leagues, I think he's a slam dunk QB too.
No question. I said we're going to agree. He was tops in my breakout quarterbacks, and he's also, I forget, was it my guys, Brandon, or best values, or I don't know. There's some two is in two of my articles.
Yeah.
So, and I've lauded him on this podcast many a time, so you can go in on this. But yeah, I have no problems with Tua.
Yeah, I would call him my guys. Did you call a my guy audible here though? I do not see Tua on your list of my guys. So you went audible.
Really?
Yeah, you tossed.
Oh, I did. He was on there originally, and I must have accidentally taken him off, meaning to take off another guy who I'm gonna sort of exclamation point the show with at the very end. You guys probably know who it is, but yes. So maybe it was an accidental audible. It was maybe like a Jay Cutler audible where I didn't really mean to do it, but it happened. And I feel good about it. I feel like, only one other person was on the same page, but that person was the person who needed to be.
Your wife, as you drop the towel and take a picture of your butt?
Completed that pass way downfield. Tua Tagovailoa, definitely one of my guys and one of TAFFP's guys this season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, guys, I want to stay at the running back position. One more running back apiece for each of us. And actually, maybe we've got others coming, but I just mean the next three players are going to be one running back apiece. We're going to go to you first, Jake, because Michael Carter is someone who slid down draft boards because of the usage that we saw for Ty Johnson, because of the fact that we saw Michael Carter out there a lot with second and third teamers in the preseason, but you are still on board with him as one of your guys. Let's hear that second half breakout case for Michael Carter.
That just comes down to talent. You know, we've already mentioned Austin Eckler on this on the show, and that's very much who he profiles like. Now, obviously, that's his ceiling. I'm not calling him Austin Eckler yet, and people have to live up to there. But, you know, for the easy, what people like a lot of times want when you're describing somebody's ability, they want like an easy player comp so they can think of it in their head. And it's Austin Eckler, but I bring up Eckler as well because Michael Carter's never going to be a 20-touch guy. He's never going to be carrying the ball 15, 20, 18 times a game. So that mix of getting around 15 touches, but half of it coming in the passing game is really his upside. And, you know, yes, Tevin Coleman sounds like he's the lead as of today. Ty Johnson has looked good, but this is similar to the Wayne Gallman thing. Like, we know who Ty Johnson is at this point. Like, why is a good preseason making people think that Ty Johnson isn't just exactly the Ty Johnson we know? He's young, but, you know, he's still Ty Johnson. And Tevin Coleman's looked fine at times, but he's a very straight line runner. And that was one of the compliments that they gave him. It was like, shot out of cannon, great straight line runner. We've known that about Tevin Coleman. That's all he does is he's a great straight line runner. That's the problem for Carter to start the season is it's a committee, and we do have Saleh coming from the Shanahan side of things who has, you know, and he brought Coleman with him, quote unquote. So, you know, those are the concerns. But I think by sixth, seventh week of the season, it's kind of similar to Miles Sanders' rookie year, and Carter's the lead, even though it might not be the lead of like 20 touches per game. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what's Tevin Coleman? He's like 28 years old on his third team. Like, he's not Adrian Peterson, yeah. So I'm not going to be afraid of a running back like that over the guy like Michael Carter, who has the talent Jake's talking about. I loved his film. I've brought that up before. I have him on like every team. I had to purposely not draft him like in the last week on one of my teams because I was like, okay, if Carter's nothing, that's nothing for every one of my fantasy teams. I had to, you know, pump the brakes somewhere just to have some relief.
Could be Michael Carter Funston.
Yeah, exactly.
we're used to hyphenating that name in the sports world. Get out there as Michael Carter Funston and totally put all your eggs in that basket. Another basket that you're diving into, Funston. Your next running back up on the board here is Kenyon Drake. We know he's going to be splitting things with Josh Jacobs, and that's really what made me raise my eyebrows, Funston. We've been doing this show together for 2 years, and you were Mr. Josh Jacobs last year. You're loving Josh Jacobs this summer. And now, I mean, are you turning on your guy here?
Are you going
full Kenyon Drake? Is this a heel turn against Josh Jacobs?
It's not. It's me accepting Josh Jacobs as a Nick Chubb type role. And if you look at the Raiders and the Browns, they're not dissimilar in how heavy they use their backfield. And I kind of am plugging Kenyon Drake. And specifically, John Gruden, under John Gruden, they've thrown the ball to the running back position a ton. And there was talk last year that Jacobs would, you know, blossom into a fully featured guy that they use in the passing game as well. It never materialized. So here's Kenyon Drake. Gone is the guys like DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard and Theo Riddick and missing somebody else, Devontae Booker. But if you start thinking about them just kind of wanting to limit Josh Jacobs' role, because I think that's what they want to do with Kenyon Drake, and it's the way I've been told Josh Jacobs actually advocated for Kenyon Drake to come onto this team. So they know there's a certain level of touches they want for Josh Jacobs and to keep him healthy for the full season. And Kenyon Drake gets the rest, in my mind, and a big chunk of that is going to be through the air. So I think he's going to, you know, be a guy that gets a serviceable amount of carries, but I think he can be a big boost, you know, kind of surprise guy in a PPR formatted league.
Yeah, we finally disagree. Yay!
Yay!
I'm not on Drake more for the fact that I just think Josh Jacobs is getting disrespected this year. I think that if you look at Josh Jacobs, Brandon's not wrong in the passing department. I just don't know if there's enough there to make Kenyon Drake consistently valuable any more than like James White of past years. And if that's what you want, like, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I actually would prefer Drake to James White this year because I don't think James White's situation is the same. We're on the Damien Harris bandwagon. It's just for Kenyon Drake's upside, without an injury in front of him, he doesn't feel much dissimilar from a lot of those RB3, 4s, Leonard Fournette behind Ronald Jones or whichever you want to mix that. Mm-hmm. It's fine. I feel like people, and I'm not saying this at Brandon, like, I don't know, because I don't think he is, but you've been on like with Josh Jacobs before in past years. I just think people are overreacting to this a little bit more than should be warranted with what Jacobs should still get in his department.
No, I kind of look at it like, I don't know, maybe like Chase Edmonds last year, where you get like 120 carries and you get like 50 catches And, you know, that. Right,
are you thinking like a lesser version of the Browns, basically?
Yeah, it's basically exactly. I think I've even written that a few times or said it here a few times. I just think he's a kind of like a slightly lesser version, or maybe not slightly, but a lesser version of Kareem Hunt, but not a, but not an unusable version.
Yeah, a Kareem Hunt light, like a Kareem Hunt at that stage of the draft, right? I mean, Kareem Hunt goes where he goes, and Kenyon Drake goes where he goes, and it feels like if you're like restarting things at that stage, he's like that part of the draft's version of Kareem Hunt. I could see a way to that being a case for the way the Raiders run their entire offense and Kenyon Drake filling that role. I'm going to stay out west, and I'm going to go to someone who you guys, you know, I love him. Raheem Mostert is my guy here. I like Trey Sermon, too. I have Trey Sermon on teams. I want a piece of San Francisco's offense. I think that's a great offense to be invested in, and something that you like about it is, you know, you take Jake's, you know, buy the cake, not the icing player, and I think that certainly holds for a lot of teams.
Right.
Yeah, right. Nailed it that time. And that's definitely true for a lot of teams, and I think it's a point well taken for a lot of teams where you don't worry about which skill player is going to be the guy who stands out. You just take the quarterback, and you get the benefit of all those skill players. I think the nice thing with San Francisco is that, like, maybe outside of George Kittle, we can reasonably expect every player to account for the same amount of icing. So whether you have Raheem Mostert or Trey Sermon or Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel, they're gonna slather their icing on the cake in different ways, but they're all going to account for about the same amount of it. And so I like being invested in this San Francisco offense, and I just love where Mostert's been going in draft season. When you look back at what he's been for this team over the last two seasons, 241 carries, 1,293 yards, 10 touchdowns, 30 catches, 336 yards, and 3 touchdowns over the last two seasons. That's 24 games total. I mean, he gets the job done, and he is very comfortable in this offense. He's very comfortable with Kyle Shanahan. And Kyle Shanahan, as much as he's going to use Trey Sermon, it's not like he's suddenly going to go away from this guy who's been so productive and such a great fit for his offense. And so I think that Raheem Mostert was just being a little bit undervalued in draft season. That's really what it comes down to. He's a great player. He's a guy who we know what to expect from. He did have the injury last season, but we know what we can basically bank on him being when he is healthy, and he's going to have a similar, if not identical, role, I think, in San Francisco's offense this season. It was just always very, very easy for me when Raheem Mostert time in drafts was coming around for me to click on his name and put him on my team, and I think it's something that I'm going to be very happy about, and anyone who followed suit is also going to be very happy about this season. Jake, where you at on Mostert? Where were you at on Mostert this summer?
Yeah, completely the value. I still think talent. Sermon's the most talented running back in that backfield. But I still think what we've seen before is, no, I'm not saying these are the Falcons when Tevin Coleman was there, but we've seen Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman both finish as RB1s in the same week. And we saw Tevin Coleman holding value with other people having value under the system when he was healthy. And that's why I kind of brought him into this conversation as well. Mm-hmm. It's just, we can have two running backs in a Shanahan backfield have good weeks together and have good value. There will be frustrating weeks while both of them are healthy. But the real upside of why you can like Sermon or Mostert is, I think I said it a couple weeks ago, and I feel like Brandon was nodding while I was saying it, is that everybody's like, imagine Sermon, and I've been one of the ones that have said this, imagine Sermon if Mostert goes down and gets hurt again. How about imagine Mostert if Sermon gets hurt and then he's not in the mix all of a sudden? I think that's the real appeal, is both of them can have RB2/3 value. And if either one of them ends up being bell cow-ish, now you have RB1 on your hands.
Well, I think the thing to say here is there won't be a bell cow, because if one of those guys goes down, Jeff Wilson comes in at some point. You know, they're always.
Does he though? That's what is he supposed to be back?
They will always have two guys though, and I'm very comfortable if those two guys are just Mostert and Sermon. I mean, on both of them, if that's the case. It's like as Jake said. I mean, we saw in Atlanta when Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman were for the season RBs 1 and 2. You know, like they were both in the top 20, and that they're capable with this offense of doing the same thing, you know, if things break right. But yeah, you're happy to take whoever's cheaper in the draft, I think, is the way it goes. Yep. So I'm with you on Mostert.
The answer about a Kyle Shanahan backfield is not which one. It's just yes. And you'll take Mostert. You'll take Sermon. They're both going to be productive, and you didn't have to pay through the nose to get either of them this draft season. Let's go to a batch of wide receivers here. This was one over the weekend, that draft I've referenced a couple times. This guy I just missed out on by a couple of picks. Felt like a real bad snipe, and one I was very disappointed to miss out on. But we're lumping him as one of Jake's guys. I think all three of us are in, however, on Cortland Sutton.
Yeah, this entire offseason is one of those ones where I kept saying this comparatively to Kenny Golladay. For a long time, was going in front of Cortland Sutton, and it just baffled me to no end, and I said it multiple times. It's like, forget, like, let's even take how many times I've said I don't like Kenny Galladay's fit with Daniel Jones. Like, we could talk about, yes, Daniel Jones has a better deep ball than people realize, but like, throw metrics out, you can watch Daniel Jones play. What it comes down to is Daniel Jones doesn't throw to covered wide receivers well. I don't care if you're 5 yards away or 30 yards away, he doesn't throw well to covered, and Kenny Galladay is not a great separator. But let's put that to the side. The one thing I kept saying about Galladay versus Sutton is, who's been the better number one consistently for his granted brief career, but over that season versus Galladay, who had that one great touchdown volume season. And on top of it, who is likely ready for week one? Cortland Sutton. Kenny Galladay has not yet even touched the field. And then Cortland Sutton comes out in week three and is cutting on a dime just like he used to. And then all of a sudden everybody was like, oh, maybe we should take Cortland Sutton. Like, yeah, you should have been taking Cortland Sutton in front of Kenny Galladay all along.
Yeah, I was recently looking at some rankings of, an industry pundit that I respect, and he had Cortland Sutton at wide receiver 37, and I lost a little respect for him just in that. But it's like, man, I think a lot of people are just, they kind of forgot who Cortland Sutton can be, and that little glimpse from the preseason was enough for me, because it showed, you know, it showed some things that are still there that I fell in love with when he, you know, went off in the second season. So, yeah, he's the number one there in Denver. Jake, I think in the flex draft, I got crap from whoever was announcing it at the time for taking Cortland Sutton.
I know. Defended you on Sirius XM.
Yeah, and they thought I should have taken Jerry Jeudy instead. I'm like, really? Is it? I mean,
that's why everybody keeps telling me I hate Jerry Jeudy this year. It's like,
I feel like that draft happened at like the height of Jeudy mania, right?
Yeah.
It was early August. We still weren't sure if Sutton's going to be ready. Jeudy's putting up all these highlights in practice. But yeah, I think you made the right choice there. And hey, just to tie it back to Cortland Sutton versus Kenny Golladay, if Kenny Golladay plays, those guys are going to be on the same field week one. Broncos are -2.5 at BetMGM. So just something that you might want to think about with those two teams getting together. Brandon, let's get to a wide receiver of yours, one of your guys, and someone who I think is comfortably a top 20 receiver. You can make a wide receiver one case for certainly this season. He's got a new quarterback. He's got a big role in his offense. It is Robert Woods.
Yeah, this one doesn't need a whole lot of explanation. He's been in the last 3 years wide receiver 13, 16, and 10 in half PPR. That's been with Jared Goff. He's just reliable. And you mentioned you can make a wide receiver one case, but you really only have to pay about wide receiver 15 overall. So you get kind of like, you get him at his floor, and and you have that ceiling for, you know, potential top 10 returns. It's business as usual with the Rams, except for there's just a huge upgrade at quarterback.
Yeah, we've been on this all summer long, and Jake, you've been on that too. Woods over Cup all day.
But it's close. I just give him both of them. I mean, they were already both borderline wide receiver ones with Jared Goff, and now you're Matthew Stafford. Don, that's the end of the argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Woods, an easy guy to like this season. It's a fun offense to invest into. It's a fun passing game to invest in with Stafford, Woods, and Cooper Kupp. And hey, Tyler Higbee, also a guy who's roundly drafted, as he should be, as a top 10 tight end. Someone who I have been wanting to get in, though, or a team I've been wanting to invest in where I can, obviously the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's a fun pass game to invest in too. And I gotta be honest, guys, at cost, the guy who I find myself gravitating toward is Chris Godwin. More so than Mike Evans, more so than Antonio Brown. Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, they're going about the same spot in drafts. It's 6-1, half dozen the other with cost. Antonio Brown, you're going to go a little bit farther down your draft board to find him. But you were very often, if you were choosing between Mike Evans, if you were the first person to draft a Buccaneers receiver, you were choosing between Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, and I always found myself taking Chris Godwin. I just loved what we saw from him last year. Only the 12 games played, but he still gave you what he gave you, 65 catches, 840 yards, and 7 touchdowns. And you do that in 12 games, and you really don't think there's going to be any reason for that Tampa offense to change. You did a good chunk of that with Antonio Brown playing his best football of the season, and then you remember that Chris Godwin had 2 different injuries in week 1 and week 2. He had another injury in week 7. He was never really, even though the 12 games he played, he was never at 100% right from the jump. And we talk about NFL players, no one's 100% at the end of the season, but Chris Godwin wasn't 100% in week 3 or week 4. And he was still able to play 3/4 of the season and put up the numbers that he did put up. And, you know, Mike Evans, I think, owns that touchdown skill at this point of his career. We've seen him put up these monster touchdown seasons many times, and so we have to grant him as being the, you know, quote, touchdown guy in that Tampa offense. But I think everything else favors Godwin, and so I found myself gravitating toward him, and my favorite piece of the Tampa passing game to get, regardless of cost, was Chris Godwin.
My take would be, I feel like he is the wide receiver version of Chris Carson, where if you got, you know, you're paying a little bit of, you're getting a discount as like there's an expectancy that there's 2 to 4 missed games in there. But like on a per game basis and what they do, like you're potentially getting a wide receiver 1 or an RB 1 if those guys play a full season. And I would be surprised if Chris Godwin played 16 games if he wasn't a wide receiver 1. So I like that in kind of the same way I'm always looking for Chris Carson, because I feel like he's better than where he goes. It's just a matter of him playing the full season.
I don't know. I think Bruce Arians said Antonio Brown looks better than he has in 4 years, so I think Antonio Brown should be the number one, clearly. Because Bruce Arians never lies.
Bruce Arians. Has Bruce Arians ever said anything hyperbolic in his life?
Oh, never.
Ever once?
Never. Never.
Never.
Oh, man. We love Bruce. Yeah. We love Bruce here. We love Bruce. I'm still waiting for that like Ronald Jones 25 carry game, but we still love Bruce. We definitely know that from him in the fantasy world. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a fun offense to watch this year, and that passing game, one that you will be happy to be invested in for sure.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Let's get to our last couple of players here, guys. We're going to go to Jake. We've only talked about one quarterback thus far, that being Tua Tagovailoa. Let's get another quarterback on the board here, Jake. Trevor Lawrence taking the NFL field for the first time in a real game this Sunday against Houston. You think it starts off well for him and keeps on going well. What do you got on Trevor?
Yeah, and I also, because I didn't put Joe Burrow because we had talked about Burrow enough. I don't want to say him for like the 10th time.
Oh, yeah.
But Lawrence, what it comes down to is the only way Lawrence goes wrong in the NFL is if Urban Meyer screws him up, which potentially looks like it could happen at this point from what's going on with Urban Meyer's mind from day to day. But, yeah, I mean, you saw Trevor Lawrence. It's so funny. You see the ebb and the flow of the preseason. It wasn't even the just mocking of the, oh, it's open quarterback competition. You saw people covering the team talking about, like, Trevor Lawrence is making some poor throws. All of a sudden he goes in week 3 and they're like, this is the Trevor Lawrence we know that we were getting. Trevor Lawrence is always going to be Trevor Lawrence. What rookie has ever stepped into preseason game 1 and thrown 300 yards and 4 touchdowns and went off like a Hall of Famer? But Trevor Lawrence, I think Brandon's smiling because he edited my piece and I said, you know, it's I hate generational, but it's the first time I'm okay with it since Andrew Luck, if you kind of see what I did there with the hating that whole generational and Andrew Luck. But he really is, and that's the truth about it.
Yeah, I mean,
Oh, and he runs.
He does run.
He'll get you three or 400 yards too.
I'm in on Trevor. I agree on the talent. I was picking him up early. I've had to pause a little bit because Urban Meyer does seem like he could potentially be as much of a car wreck as we thought there was possibility of it being. And the offensive line is a major concern. But the weapons, awesome. The potential for high volume passing is great. So there's plenty to like. There is some worrisome downside there, but I even with those happening, I still think Trevor Lawrence is going to be a pretty solid fantasy play, even if some of those things conspire against him.
No surprise that so many of the guys that we've talked about in today's show are guys that we've talked about quite a bit this summer. There's a reason why we like these guys. There's a reason why we talked about them leading up to draft season. There are guys. They're guys that we've ended up with on a lot of our teams. This one actually is someone who we haven't spent a ton of the summer talking about. Brandon, you've got Curtis Samuel as one of your guys. Obviously a new team, but a coaching staff he's familiar with in Washington. What's the case for Curtis Samuel being someone that you routinely attack in drafts?
Yeah, I had him earlier on a squad, and then just this last week, like in the, round 11 or round 12, he was still sitting there. And I was like, why is he going outside the wide receiver top 50 in my drafts here? He's now the wide receiver 2 in Washington. It's, his biggest competition outside of Terry McLaurin, I guess Logan Thomas as well, but among the wide receivers, is a third round rookie and a journeyman slot man in Adam Humphries. I just think that with improved quarterback play in Washington and being the number 2, you're talking about a guy who was top 25 wide receiver as the number 3 in Carolina last year. There's no reason not to like him in a, pushing inside the top 40 kind of sense at wide receiver. And I think you're getting him lots of times much better. You can wait on him later than that easily.
I was shocked I had to include him in the waiver column because he's not even 60% rostered.
What?
Yeah, he's not even 60% on Yahoo, which is just absurd. And, the injury is past him. They said he just might not be game shape, that being that he might not get the full complement in week 1 because he's got to get up to game speed. But let's go back to, as Brandon said, let's go back 2 months ago when this first happened, this signing, earlier than that, but you get the point. Like, playing with Fitzpatrick, and he just finished his wide receiver 25 with 3 guys in the mix versus just, those 2.
Yeah.
On a team that had 15 passing touchdowns from its starting quarterback, as you like to point out.
On top of that.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And so expecting much bigger things from Curtis Samuel. We are rounding third and headed for home. We had a few other guys that we're just not going to get to. I'll throw them out here really quick because there's one last guy I do want us to hit on. I have Rondale Moore and Allen Robinson as some of my guys. Jake had one more wide receiver we were going to talk about, Tyrell Williams, and Brandon, like so many of us, on CD Lamb as well. So if you do still have drafts, know that we are on board with you if you are targeting Rondale Moore and Tyrell Williams late, CD Lamb and Allen Robinson a whole lot earlier. There's one more guy, though. How could we possibly do a My Guys show and not mention our guy? Our guy, TAFFP's guy,
Boo.
Joe Burrow. We had to get him in there. We had to get him. I mean, we might be the 3 highest guys on Joe Burrow in the entire fantasy industry. We're going to mention him. We're all sharing him in the Flex League. We all have him as top, top 8 quarterback? I know I have him as a top 8 quarterback. I mean,
I'm
we
got
to mention Joe Burrow. We're staking everything on Joe Burrow on this show.
Yeah, I think I'm 10 on him, but I'm definitely a solid QB1 on him. As Jake has pointed out many times, there's mid-600 plus pass attempts to guys like T. Higgins and, the top-rated receiver in the draft and Jamar Chase and a as reliable slot guy in Tyler Boyd as there is, and a guy in the backfield that can catch the ball really well. This is good weapons, high volume. What's not to like?
The only thing they might not like is maybe he just doesn't run. Yeah, it's as much as like Trevor Lawrence. Mm-hmm. So like that's just if you want to nitpick there. But yeah, we've been on Joe Burrow. Like you said, this is the show's quarterback for this year is Joe Burrow.
Would it be crazy if he had a Tom Brady 2020 season?
Oh.
A Tom Brady 2020 season. Would that have 40 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 4,700 yards, right? Something like that off the top of my head. Would that be crazy? I think that's totally within range for Joe Burrow. The interceptions
the touchdowns feel heavy. The 40 touchdowns, that's what feels heavy to me. 4,700 yards and 30-plus touchdowns. Yeah, but I'm just hesitating on the touchdowns just because of the offense as a whole.
Sure, you want to be by nature be conservative about these projections. This is something that you would throw out during our bold prediction show. What was that last week? You know, that's more in line, but you know, mid-30s. That's not crazy, I don't think. And that's really good, by the way.
All right.
By the way, do you guys know who led the league in passing yards? Do you know who led the league in passing yards last year? Nobody can ever get it right.
I do.
You do?
I do know.
And you say Faustin.
I know most. I actually just found it out like 2 weeks ago. I know because of Best on the Board, the Athletic's new gambling podcast. Check it out. So I won't say Brandon. You have a guess.
Oh gosh, I just saw this the other day. It did surprise me, and I've already forgotten it. Go ahead, give it to me again. Someone like
who's Deshaun Watson?
He's not going to play this season.
Was Deshaun Watson? Okay,
yeah, 4,800 yards last year. Nobody ever realizes that.
Yeah, and hey, did it on a 4-12 team, which is part of the reason why Joe Burrow at +2,000 last I checked on BetMGM is one of my favorite futures bets, leading the league in passing yards. You don't need to be on a good team. Maybe you don't even want to be on a good team if you are going to lead the league in passing yards. So I'll do one more bold prediction. Joe Burrow, 5,000 plus. He has a Tom Brady season. He matches that Tom Brady season, maybe with a few other interceptions sprinkled in. That'll do it for the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast here today on our My Guys episode. The next time you see the three of us together, you are going to hear us talking about week 1 rankings. We have made it. Cannot wait for Thursday to get here. For Jake Seeley and Brandon Funston, I'm Michael Beller. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.